Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Ira Harris and Peter Buchvar. Ira is a hedge fund manager, global trader in foreign currencies, bonds, commodities, and equities for over 40 years. He was also CME director from 1997 to 2003. And Peter is chief investment officer for the Bleakley Financial Group and Advisory. He has a newsletter product called Book Report, BOOKREPORT.com, which has great macroeconomic insight and perspective with lots of updates on economic indicators. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, Rich. Hi, Ira.
Hi, Rich.
Great.
Hi, Peter. All right.
Yeah, just thought we'd begin with the today is Wednesday, September 26th, around noon Eastern time, and we have the Fed statements coming up shortly, even though this program will be published slightly after, but just wondering your thoughts, what could be said this afternoon. Ira?
Well, I think, you know, we're all baked in at 25 basis points. I just put something out, a little note on the blog, and I don't know what Peter will say to it. I think one of the more interesting aspects, you know, people are looking for them to remove the line that policy is no more, is not accommodated anymore. I'm not sure about that. But I will be watching the way this vote goes, because I want to see, you know, there's some discussion out there. I don't know who it is, of course, they never put names to it, that there are some who are looking for 50 basis points. Well, I know that Peter and I have talked about this in meetings previous where we would have liked to have seen 50 basis points. I don't think this one is doable because of the closeness to the November elections. But I want to see the way that Brainard and Williams vote, because their recent hawkishness is you know, I don't know if Charlie Evans is a voting member, because he's been more hawkish of late, too. So I want to see if actually some of these hawks were to vote in favor of a 50 basis point increase. That'd be the most interesting thing to me, because that would put a much more hawkish tone to the Fed regardless. And then we'll, wait for the press conference. But outside of that, I'm not looking for anything else.
Mm-hmm. And Peter?
Yeah, Evans actually, he's an alternate member, so he won't be voting, but we will have some new voters. Clarida will be voting for the first time, and some relatively new members. Quarles will be voting, and Barkin. So it is a newer complexion, and I think that because of it, they'll be just raising 25 basis points and leaning towards a December hike. As the market is pricing that in, you know, the market, or at least the Fed, I think, to follow up what Ira said on Brainard and Williams, you know, they want to keep on hiking, and you might as well just do it in December, because next year you're wide open in terms of meetings, because every meeting is a press conference. So you're not, you know, whereas before, the next press conference meeting would have been March, and if they did not hike in December, they would have to wait till March. Now there's a lot more flexibility next year in when to hike. And you might as well just move closer to where they want to go ultimately, and that's 3% or more, and get there sooner rather than later. Because I think, you know, a lot of these Fed people, they do speak to a lot of business contacts, and everyone is telling them wages are going higher. We can't find any workers. And these academics still focus on the Phillips curve. They still believe that inflation will likely be triggered by that, and then you throw in the tariffs. So hiking today, they're only going to get to two to two and a quarter, and which tells me that maybe they will keep in that wording, that being accommodative, because to think that 2 to 2 and a quarter is not accommodative is quite comical. And Ira can probably speak to this better than I can, because he's seen a long-term level of interest rates much higher. And it's laughable that 2 to 2 and a quarter would not be considered accommodative at the Fed funds level. I don't think Powell wants to be that exciting with the statement. I think the statement will be not much different than the prior one. So we're going to have to wait till the press conference in order to gauge some more details in which way he is leaning. But again, whether he raises in December or January, whatever, they want to get to 3% plus in the Fed funds rate, all else equal, and based on what they're seeing right now.
Any thoughts on that, Ira? He mentioned.
I think that's absolutely right, and Powell and I think the new voice of Clarita. Well, we don't have Nellie Lange. That's her name, right? Lange,
yeah.
Montana, right? Who seemed to be at least beyond academics and aware of the financial ramifications that emanate from the Fed policy and a long-held Fed policy, which I find interesting. And I think Vince Reinhardt was on with Santelli today, and I thought that was an interesting discussion because I think Vince Reinhardt made a good point, which is that these later appointments by Trump have been pretty responsible Fed appointments. I'm very surprised because I wouldn't put them as easy money people whatsoever. So while he's spoken about easy money, whoever is advising him, whosoever counsel he's taken on the Fed, maybe it's directly from Powell, these have been very responsible Fed appointees. I think that's a good thing because, as Peter discussed, we need to get away from the academics. Not that academics don't have a place, but they dominated the Fed. Greenspan certainly relied on certain, although he had a gut feeling, and as Powell said in his Jackson Hole speech, he applauded that Greenspan had what I think Powell would say he has, which is some risk management tools. So he's just not knee-jerk as to one way or another, although I would certainly argue that Greenspan, with the start of every meeting raising a quarter like he did at that certain period, really set the Fed on a bad course. I and the world, because every other central bank has followed that same policy. And for the life of me, I don't get it. You're willing to cut 1%, but you only raise in quarter point increments. Well, you know,
measured pace, right? That's what Greenspan said every meeting in the mid 2000s. Measured
right.
Pace.
Yeah, which I think is a terrible thing because you're not letting what the market is telling you. You're not listening to markets. I'm on a set course. I think a set course is a terrible outlook for a Fed. You can have mandated goals, but why should you be on a set course to reach it? I know that Peter agrees that they should have raised a half a point long ago, but this quarter point is not. So then they actually would have then been able to step back and let the market digest. Well, so I'm in agreement with Peter. It's a long answer to a short question.
Yeah. I mean, here we are in the 10th year of this expansion, and today's hike is only going to bring real rates to zero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For them to call a zero real rate not accommodative, if they take that wording out,
right?
Getting back to what I said earlier, is laughable. So I'd lean to them leaving it in, but we'll see.
I see. And let's go to a macro view on the financial markets. Peter, you've recently mentioned or observed on the disconnect that you see between the U.S. markets and the emerging markets. Can you elaborate on that? Like, what is behind that?
Yeah, it's been pretty glaring, the outperformance of U.S. versus everybody else. In fact, everybody else is down on the year. We know the S&P 500 in particular has had a great year, even though 40% of S&P 500 revenues are sourced overseas. Certainly worries about slowing growth in Europe, certainly in China, and by default, the rest of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being reflected in their equity markets. And we know we've seen problems with emerging markets. And I think to believe that the U.S. is somehow immune to that is silly. But right now, at least, U.S. growth is well outperforming most other areas. Earnings growth in the first half of the year were very good. It still should be fine in Q3. But I do think you're going to start to see some issues with earnings related to tariffs, related to higher labor costs, since that is the largest input for companies. And I don't see how much longer that discrepancy can last. Either overseas is going to catch up, or on the upside, or we're going to catch up to them to some extent on the downside. But the differential is pretty glaring.
So right now, has it been due to international capital flows going into the U.S. from maybe like emerging market issues, concerns, challenges, and this global slowdown looking to the U.S. As a safe haven, also considering the U.S. dollar getting stronger?
That could be part of it, but I think it's U.S. investors, when dominated by machines, they don't respond to speculation about the possibility of a slowdown driven by what's going on overseas. They only do it when they actually see evidence of it, whether that's in earnings season over the next couple of weeks, if we begin to see signs of it, or it's actually in the economic data. So I think that's why the U.S. market has sort of shrugged off not only the growth story that's changing overseas, but you know the rate story here where they continue to rise. And you know, we have a very over-levered global economy. We have a very highly levered, over-levered U.S. corporate balance sheet outside of big cap tech. And a rise in rates is usually not a good setup with that. So I think there's this belief that somehow the Fed's going to engineer a soft landing. Historically, that's rarely the case. But until they begin to see evidence of some weaker data here or disappointments in earnings, they're not going to respond. So my point is that don't look at the U.S. equity market as a discounting mechanism. And I think it's mostly reactive instead.
And your thoughts, Ira, on this?
Well, you know, I'm going to take a little bit different tact than Peter. I mean, I agree with him, but I see things that are going on. You know, it's like the other day, Draghi's comments, you know, which were so, it was this 180 degree turn from his press conference when he says Draghi sees vigorous pickup in underlying inflation. And they walked these back, but the dollar did sell off, thinking, well, the Europeans are going to be, as Draghi says, vigorous. You know, they see vigor. Well, this was totally in contravention of what we heard him at the press conference. So it's really raising my antennas. Is there something going on here? Are the Europeans now all of a sudden getting a sense that Trump, that if they don't do something to raise, try to raise the level of the euro, that Trump is going, they're going to feel the sting of Trump's tweets and whatever? That really boggled my mind because I just don't see it. Everything has been the other way from all the other conversation. And then, of course, Corre and then Prayet walked it back, even though Nowotny from Austria was still adamant, you know, in a more bullish sense about pulling back. And then yesterday, I see another, there was a tweet out that made it out on from, I don't even know who she is, Dr. Julia Coronado, that said a hawkish Yellen, unemployment rate is half to full point below the natural rate. Fed should at a minimum stabilize it and may need to nudge it higher. I don't, so it's like almost a hawkish comment, but yet 2 weeks ago on the 14th of September, we had Yellen speaking at Brookings in that group meeting. And in her speech, totally, it's all about lower for longer, lower for longer, lower for longer. So
do things that don't work and keep on doing what doesn't work is what she's saying.
Yeah, it's such mixed messages. Right, you're right. That's a great point. And I just don't know where, and these all make it into the headlines. And I think it really is confusing for markets, even though Yellen carries no weight whatsoever, none. But it's the way people throw these things out. I don't see that hawkish stance as Peter talking about. Where's Europe going? Europe's going nowhere. They're, you know, as I've maintained, and I know we've discussed this for more than a few years already, Draghi's locked himself into a terrible trap here, and it gets laid more and more. And I know Peter talked about it this morning with the Italians and what happens. And now the French are really caught in this same kind of similar trap because they need Macron's poll ratings are dropping dramatically. And even as Peter pointed out, the CAC is the strongest of the major European stock markets. So, but his poll numbers are dropping and he's going to need to placate some on the left with greater spending, but they're not going to be able to do it. And Germany is really in dire straits right now politically. Merkel is having the legs cut under her all over the place, and October brings the election in Bavaria, in which the CSU, Seehofer, is under dire threat. And it'll be interesting to see if they even hold to be the most popular party, because that will really bring pressure on Merkel in many other ways. So Europe is a difficult straits, and I don't see them. Yes, they're going to end QE at the end of December. But even Draghi said, ending QE, they're not shrinking the balance sheet. He was explicit about that. And that makes that capital key such another dangerous situation for him, because he's got to buy, by definition, has to buy 18% of the assets the ECB buys are German bunds or German instruments. Well, with German surpluses growing, I don't know where they're going to find that much to buy without pushing German rates, even on the long end, further down. So there's all these things confronting us.
And could that issue in terms of the amount of German debt being used as diminishing, could that prompt the emergence of a Eurobond for the ECB?
Well, there are certainly those who hope so, because I think that's what the end game is.
Germans will try to push that into the future as long as they can.
As far as they can, because that would mean that the Germans would have to underwrite the entire debt load. And I just don't see any, unless you had a denationalization, meaning a sell-off of a lot of publicly held companies, meaning publicly held, the government held companies, in order to trim, in order to be able to buy back in some of those bonds with real assets rather than ECB money. So I don't know. It will take a major political upheaval in Germany from those who are desirous of that, because right now the rising forces in Germany, the rising political voices, are not in favor of that. In fact, I would say that one of the staunchest platform policies of the Alternative for Germany, the AfD, is less German involvement into the guarantee of the European financial system. So the winds are blowing in the opposite direction, and Peter's exactly right. They'll delay that as long as possible. Listen, Macron couldn't even, when he was a rising star, couldn't get her to sign on to a unified financial system, in which is the risk would be absorbed by basically a European stability mechanism, with the Germans guaranteeing that, because the Germans saw through that. And she wouldn't even sign on that when Macron was maybe somebody to contend with. Right now, he's a weakened force as she is, and it's the Italians, in my mind, who are really holding the cards here.
So as we go towards the end of the year, could the German-French yield spreads on bonds likely increase as the ECB buys less assets going into the end of the year? Your thoughts, Peter?
Well, it's a good question. I actually just think they're both going higher. Whether the spread widens or not, I'm not sure. But as Ira said, they both now have political issues. I can't fully understand why Macron's poll numbers are dropping as fast as they are. Maybe just the French just don't like change that he's trying to bring. But I'm surprised by that. But I think either way, you're going to see a rise in yields in both countries. And I think people don't understand how much of an influence the ECB was, and still is barely, in terms of their buying in those markets. And while they're continue to reinvest proceeds, they were buying 7 times net issuance of European bonds. The Fed QE at its peak was 25% of net issuance of treasuries and MBS. So that's how dominant the ECB was. So while we all know what they're going to do, they've told us what they're going to do, I still think there is just this level of nonchalance that somehow European bond yields can stay around these current levels, even with the reinvestment. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm most worried about, is sort of a rate shock in Europe that could have, you know, ripple effects. I mean, we're already seeing the Bank of Japan pulling back, and we've seen a jump in longer end yields there. And we see the 10-year yields now creeping closer to 15 basis points as Bank of Japan is more tolerant of that. And you see the U.S. 10-year, just a few basis points from breaking out to multi-year highs. And if you see these rise in yields, it's not for all good reasons. It's not because, oh, the economies are great and the market's just doing it. It's, you know, you have this gorilla in the room that's walking out and buying less in a combination with other things, including inflation and others. And I think people are just way too nonchalant with this move up in interest rates.
And Ira, what do you see happening as we go towards the end of the year?
I think that's right. But on the French-German, the reason I dig through the plumbing, and with, you know, if you look, German issuance, as Peter pointed, you know, issuance, mm-hmm. what they've bought of issuance, but German issuance has diminished because they're running surpluses. France, absolutely yeah. not. It's grown over these last years. And the real canary in the coal mine is that they're running these budget deficits, meaning France and Italy, with these ultra low interest rates. And let's not minimize that, because
and at least in France, growth north of 2%.
And growth and there's still and these deficits haven't shrunk whatsoever. And if interest rates start to rise, as Peter and I believe that they're going to do, it's going to put even greater pressure on these deficits. Because I don't know that you're going to get better growth. Yeah, I applaud Macron. I think he's trying to turn the tables on what has been a sclerotic economic policy, you know, from Hollande and even Sarkozy. They did some really stupid things. He's trying to undo them, but the deficit is still growing. You know, it's like with Greece. You know, everybody talks about how Greece has turned around. Well, the Greece GDP debt to GDP ratio, even though with all this austerity, it's still bigger than when it started down that path of austerity, and that's with interest rates dropping dramatically. And that's where the real risk here lies. And from the plumbing aspect of it, German credits are far better than the rest of the credits. I mean, maybe the Dutch and Austrian certainly, you know, without the ECB would be able to stand somewhat on their own. But the others, I'm not certain where those interest rates go. And that includes France, because France is not without its problems. And if Macron fails, the issues in France are really going to get worse. As Peter points out, politically, they don't like this type of change. And the unions in France still have a lot of power. Macron would like to diminish that, would see a diminishment of that power, but they still have a lot of power. So, that's the reason that I like to be long German and short French, because right now the spread on the 10-year is about 32 basis points, which is about mid-range over the last 3 or 4 years. But based on the shrinking amount of German assets and the fact that German assets are needed for repo financing, they're high-quality liquid assets, that'll put a demand in there regardless. And unless Draghi openly breaks with the capital key, which he has to be very careful of, because there are those in Germany who will return back to the German Constitutional Court and say that this is illegal because you're financing individual countries and in violation of the entire edifice of the central bank and what it's supposed to do. So, I mean, there's things that are weighing out there.
Yeah, it would be a real disappointment if Macron is gone at some point. He was the right guy for that job at the right time, France, and it's amazing how people don't appreciate it.
Given these thoughts on Europe and what we mentioned earlier in the U.S., could we see another round of more easing by central banks globally? If we go to China and look at the currency there, if the yuan weakens and we get global disinflation, could that cause more easing by central banks globally? Peter?
It's a good question. I don't think the Chinese want to go down the route of seeing a dramatically weaker currency. They are trying to shift their economy from a manufacturer, infrastructure, fixed asset investment type economy to more services and consumption. And you don't want a weaker currency if that's the transition you're trying to make. You don't want to damage the purchasing power of consumers if you're trying to improve consumer spending. So I think they're more interested in having a stable currency, not a dramatically weaker one. I'm sure the weakness we've seen, they'll be tolerant of, because it's relatively modest and it can help cushion the impact of the tariffs. But I wouldn't look for a major decline in the currency. I think the currency that trades very squishy to me is the U.S. dollar. And people should be asking what's going on with the U.S. dollar, considering the outperformance economically, central bank that is far ahead of the curve relative to others, and why outside of a few emerging markets where the dollar has strengthened, why against the euro or the yen or some of the others has it not traded well? And I'm putting aside the pound, because that's obviously very Brexit related. That's what I think people should be asking, is what's going on with the dollar, and less so with the yuan.
And Ira, your thoughts?
I think that's dead right on target. And I know, Peter, that's the Michael Pettis argument, which is, hey, if you're trying to build your domestic economy, and China is certainly, if I look at the copper market is telling me that China is going to embark on another round of massive infrastructure projects, whether it's in the Belt and Road Initiative or just in China itself. But that's what the market is sensing here. You don't want a weaker currency. You want to, if you're trying to ramp up domestic spending, you'd like to have a stronger currency, because then you buy cheaper imports. So I'm 100% agreement, and I agree with Peter with the dollar. The dollar is interesting here, because everything that we've talked about, the cost of carry, if you're short dollars, the cost of carry is quite expensive. If we use it on overnight money in Europe, it's let's say German money, it's 250 basis points going higher. If we use 2-year differentials, it's over. It's well over 3%, because German 2 years are about negative 50, and the U.S. is, of course, 2.8. So I don't ever remember, I won't say ever, but it's been certainly over 3 decades that we've seen a spread that wide on 2 years or less. So these are things that should be aiding and abetting the strengthening dollar, as a lot of people have been positioned for. But I will say, not Peter. Peter from 107, 108 got bearish the dollar, but that was based on the Trump White House, I think, as much as anything. And I'm not sure. And Bob Lighthizer, who is the power here, is not afraid to promote a weaker currency. And I think the markets are starting to accept to price that into some of their, and I say beginning to, but they really haven't yet. That may be one of the tools that they utilize.
What about Brazil? Are they intentionally driving their currency lower to help their agriculture exports, hurting U.S. grain exports?
Well, I think they don't need the help. The U.S. handed the business to them from China.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely. They don't need the help. It's weak. It's bad politics. And they're in a great position now, because the Chinese can thumb their nose at the U.S. for the moment, because the agricultural exports from Brazil are just so cheap. Yeah. Which, even though they had a bumper crop, because they're so cheap, it'll be interesting to see how much planting the Brazilian farmers do this year. Whether even though international prices are lower, priced in terms of real, which the farmers ultimately get paid in, as they take their dollars that they receive on the international market and convert it to domestic currency, they're not suffering whatsoever. So the United States farmers are suffering under tariffs, as well as having to compete against a weakened Brazilian real. So they don't need any help. They're not doing anything here. In fact, I think they believe that the currency is too weak relative to other policy aims that they have.
And finally, moving over to Japan, how will the Bank of Japan be able to extricate itself from 5 years of QQE, qualitative and quantitative easing? since they've accumulated so much Japanese debt and equities. Your thoughts, Ira?
Well, I don't know that they know how they're going to extricate themselves. They've just been muddling along here. And I mean muddling. They've proceeded down this path for way too long. Supposedly, you know, we heard last week that Abe was backing away from the inflation targets after his newfound political strength. As everybody else has been diminished, he seems to be climbing, although he's got his plate full. But I don't know. I don't know how they get out of here. I just don't. And they're not going to do it with a weaker currency. You know, if we listen to Trump, the sense that he's looking to throw tariffs onto the Japanese for because they run too large of surpluses with the U.S. The Japanese have to be very careful here, and the Europeans can't be too happy because the euro against the yen has been rallying dramatically. So the European auto industry is facing a headwind of a weaker yen and U.S. tariffs. This is and some really bad fallout from Brexit, which not enough people talk about, that the European auto industry could really get here. But I don't know what the Japanese are going to do here. They are also they've followed this, you know, the Bernanke down the rabbit hole for way too long, and I don't know what they do here.
Peter?
Yeah, it's a great point. I don't know what they're going to do. I think they're acknowledging the squeeze that they're in by allowing a whole 10 basis points extra of a yield grab that banks can get in Japan, which is quite amazing, from 10 to 20 basis points. They are certainly slowing the rate of purchases. I think they've basically cut QE in half. I think they've all of a sudden realized that, wow, they're a dominant player in the ETF market and are a top 10 holder in about 40% of Japanese Nikkei companies. And I think they got their fingers crossed on generating some higher inflation so they can further get out of what they've done. But I don't see how they can ever get out of what they've done. So I think they'll just continue to try to lessen their influence and see what happens. But, you know, Kuroda, talk about overstaying one's welcome.
Yeah. You know, and to add to that, I think one of their plans was is that at some point that they'd be able to start buying foreign bonds if they needed to. But now that they've run into Trump, there's no way that the BOJ or even some of those pension funds have to be very careful. The government pension investment fund, they can't just willy-nilly, because that'll move to weaken the yen, and they have to be very careful here.
Yeah, that'd be dangerous.
Okay. On that note, I will end it there. And just how can our listeners learn more about your work, Peter?
If they're interested in wealth management, they can go to bleakley.com and reach out to me. If they want to see my daily missives, they can subscribe at bookreport.com. As Rich said earlier, bookreport.com.
And Ira?
At my blog post, Notes from Underground, you can go to Ira Harris, YRAHARRIS.com, and it'll come up, Notes from Underground, and you can, just your registering, get access to it and join the conversation that takes place there on a regular basis about many of these same issues. Again, it's just a discussion of what's going on in the world, and hopefully you can find your way to profitable investments from them.
Great insight as always. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll do it again.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only, and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.